Lovely, lovely warm days, but it actually gets very, very, very cold at night, and my heart goes out to people who are homeless at this time. And we are joined today by Brian McLaughlin from Inner City Helping Homeless. Hello, Brian, how are you?
Morning, Adrian. How are you?
I'm fine, very, very warm indeed in here in the studio, but I'm really angry when I heard about this. I'm sure people, the listeners, will have heard that there's the Brew Amshire Hostel on Thomas Street, which was providing emergency overnight accommodation there since about October 2015, and it's about to close. So there's a bit of update on it, and maybe perhaps you'll tell us about that, because I was just shocked to hear that a place that was housing homeless people was going to close down, and nothing being done about it. So what's the update on that?
So the latest is, I mean, we found out kind of last minute that the Brew would be closing over kind of a 2-day period the week before last. So we got in touch with the Dublin Regional Homeless Executive and spoke to Eileen Gleeson herself, who assured us that there was an extra 120 beds in place to cover the transition from people that would be leaving the Brew. However, we noticed straight away the first night that this happened, we had an increase on the number of people our teams were dealing with on the streets, and that kind of maintained for the rest of the week. So like the numbers jumped up from approximately 125, 130 up to 150. So there was definitely a fallout from the closure of the Brew. Now, whether it's a situation that people that were actually residents in the Brew and staying there regularly weren't told that there was alternative accommodation for them, or if they chose not to take that alternative accommodation for fear it was a hostel that they didn't trust or believe in to go into. But we definitely saw an increase on the streets around the time of the Brew closure.
And even though they had said at the time, they said, we are working very closely with DePaul and to ensure a smooth transition for all residents. But, it's not happening, as you've already seen. And how many people were housed in that particular shelter?
Approximately 120 people.
Right, okay. And why is it that they were closing it? I know their lease ran out, but how come they didn't renew it, or what's the situation there?
Well, from what we understand, the Brew was actually meant to be open as a temporary measure back in 2015, just for, as I'm sure you're aware, we've spoken about it before, the cold weather initiative beds that come in play over the Christmas period and into the new year. So the Brew originally was just for that purpose. However, it ended up being a full-time hostel across the rest of the year and subsequently since then as well. So it sounds to me like they actually went over the time frame that was expected in the Brew. So it was inevitable to some degree. But as I say, we only found out about it the day it was happening. So it wasn't something that was well communicated to anyone within homeless services. So I would assume that the same people that were staying there were in the same position where they weren't sure of where they would be going. So a lot of them would have probably taken their chances to go back on the street rather than risk going into, for example, Merchant's Quay and sleeping on a yoga mat on the floor.
Yeah, but I mean, I just can't understand that they wouldn't have liaised with you guys and other homeless shelters to let them know this is happening and that there's going to be, these 120 people out on the streets, that you could be ready and prepared and try to have some sort of a transition. I just can't.
Yeah, not even that. I mean,
even to the point of it,
if we had known, say, a week or two out, our teams that were liaising or engaging with people that were staying in the Brew or any of our case management team could have been making people aware that, look, this is coming down the line in the next week or 10 days. However, they will have a new alternative accommodation for you. So make sure to link in with them and find out where that is and try and get yourself to the new level of accommodation. But it doesn't seem to have happened. I mean, there's no coincidence that the numbers shot up that dramatically overnight, exactly at the time that the Brew was closing. So we definitely feel that the communications maybe weren't there correctly with some people, and people have gone back out to the street rather than looking to go, as we say, into the likes of Merchant's Quay or an alternative accommodation.
Well, I don't know. I mean, Owen Murphy and the rest of them, they just seem to be, I don't know, they're just away with the fairies. They're completely out of it. They do not see the necessity for starting to build social housing. What is the problem? Why do you think they're so against
that? Yeah, I mean,
that?
They seem completely detached from what's happening on the ground and detached from reality. And I think that applies to this government across the board. It doesn't apply to housing and homelessness. I mean, you could say the same from, you know, the health and the trolley situation and the stuff that's going on in the medical profession. So, I mean, this government in particular don't seem to have the empathy or compassion for the people that are most impacted. If they did, they would be talking about a huge public housing building plan, you know, undertaken by the local authorities. Consistently since Owen Murphy came into power and prior to that with Simon Coveney, they have consistently poured money into the private rental market. They're pouring money into private developers as part fives, you know, for 10% of the private developer stock. But what they're doing in that situation is, not only is it not having empathy and compassion for the people that are most impacted, economically it's not the smartest thing to do either, because we've seen situations where O'Coolan Housing out in Ballymun have shown that they can build apartments and houses for between 190,000 and 230,000 euro. So rather than getting O'Coolan Housing to build on state-owned land for 230,000 euro for a three-bed, for example, they would rather go to a private developer who's building their own site and pay them 340 or 350,000 for each of these homes. And that doesn't make any sense, because all they're doing is pouring money into the private developers' pockets, and they're not actually building proper affordable and social housing on public lands. And it doesn't seem to matter how high the number gets, how many people, how many children are affected by it, how many deaths we're seeing within homeless services, be it, you know, from some sort of addiction, from a mental health issue. The level of suicides is huge as well across the country. And now we've even seen it where any of the travellers on the traveller sites around Dublin are going to be evicted as well. So that's a huge number of people as well that could end up in homeless services as a result of bad management from both the council and from the government.
Definitely. I mean, it's not... we all know that the main cause of homelessness are the evictions from the private rental market. So why they're just constantly putting all their resources into that end of things and thinking, well, you know, people can rent a home there. It's just, I don't know, it's ridiculous. Now, in a report that you sent through, it said that last year 1,606 people were reclassified and removed from the homeless figures to I suppose, make the reduction. I suppose the way they do with the social welfare, they used to be putting them onto different schemes or things and then saying that they're no longer unemployed. But what does this reclassified mean? What does that mean?
So what happened last year was, again, without any warning, we saw the removal of 1,606 people that had been calculated in the homeless figures, and they were suddenly removed as a direct report from Minister Murphy himself and from his department. Now, what happened in those cases were a lot of the people involved were actually, say, families, and they were living in a social house or an affordable home. However, it was with no security of tenure, with no lease agreement, and it was actually being paid by Section 10 emergency funding, which in our opinion and in the opinion of everyone in homeless services, if it's being funded by Section 10 emergency funding, they should be included in the figures. Now, what happened last year was we actually saw a bit of pushback from some of the local authorities, particularly Louth and Laois, who were a couple of the boroughs that had people removed from the list. And they actually came out publicly and said, look, yes, these people have a home to go into, they can turn the key in, they can walk through the door, but this is a temporary measure. We're paying for it out of the emergency funding. This is not a long-term solution. These families could be moved on at any given moment. So as far as we're concerned, yes, they are homeless, but the department forced their hand and made them remove those people. So you would ask questions about, there seems to be a lot of smoke and mirrors. And as you said there, there's a huge issue in this country with people being moved from one list to another to water down figures and make it look less, you know, less as an urgency issue than it actually is. And I think we've seen this across the board, whether it's health lists, medical waiting lists, across the housing. So there seems to be too much emphasis on trying to appear to be doing something rather than actually getting down and doing it.
This is true, yeah, definitely. They just fudge the figures and, you know, everybody, they'll all think it's great. But they were saying in the last 2 years that you've seen an increase of 33% in the overall number of homeless people across the whole country. I mean, that's staggering in 2 years. You know, 33%.
It's especially bad, Adrienne, as you know as well as anyone. You know, we're hearing consistently over the last couple of years about the recovery of the economy and how strong we are and how good of a position we're in. Yet the most fundamental issues that we have in this country are housing and homelessness, putting a roof over people's head, a proper roof, a home for children to grow up in, alongside, as we said, the hospital waiting list, the, you know, cervical cancer, so many other things that have happened in the health side of things. So how, in one hand, can you be telling us the country is doing so well, but yet, on the other hand, the gap between the top 3 and 4% and the rest of the country is getting deeper and further away. And that's a serious problem, because there seems to be a lot of wealth in this country, but it's being held by the top couple of percent of people, and everyone else below that is getting further and further away from being safe and secure in their lives.
Yeah, I know. And I mean, I don't know, this government overall that have come through, they just seem to be so totally removed from it. And as you say, they're stating that, oh, everything's great, everything's lovely for those top people, for the people that they are incommunicado with, but they don't see what's going on the ground level, or they do and they just don't care, you know.
Well, that's the other side of it. You start to ask the question, how much of it is ignorance and how much of it is just arrogance? Because the responses that we get, no matter how many people pass away, like we saw a situation only a week and a half ago where a young mother took her life, who was on the social housing waiting list for so long and living in emergency accommodation. So we're hearing these stories over and over again, but yet it doesn't seem to move this government fast enough into a position of saying, okay, this has to end now. We have the land available. We've said numerous times, a lot of experts have said it, there's enough zoned land in Dublin to build 114,000 homes. There's enough across the country to build 400,000 homes. So the zoned land is actually there, ready and willing to be built on. And the government still persists in going down the private developer route. And as you said, the private rental market route when it comes to the housing assistance payment and RAS support. So many people, as you said, have come through, have been evicted from the private rental market into homelessness. They spend X amount of time in homeless, whether it's 6 months, 12 months, 18 months. They're pushed back into the private rental market again through a HAP payment. And then a few months down the line, the landlord decides that they're quote-unquote selling the property or refurbishing it, and suddenly the person's back in homeless services again. So it's not solving the problem. It's putting sticky tape over it, but it's not lasting. So until they actually really start building on the level required, this problem won't go away anytime soon.
No, definitely not. And then the people who actually go onto the HAP, they're taken off the list, the social housing list. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, well, yes, that's the case. So that's why people have been pushed into that direction. Now, we've actually spoken to some families that have, in the space of 18 months, have gone from, you know, a HAP rental property back into homeless services, into a hostel, into a family hub, back into HAP again, only for the same thing to happen to them again. So we're not learning from our mistakes. That's the thing that this government seems to do consistently. They just don't learn from what hasn't worked in the past and kind of work to make that better for the future. They consistently persist in burying their head in the sand, and we're persisting with this particular route, and we're not going to change from that despite what anyone says. But until they get their head out of the sand, so to speak, and realise that they need to start building on the level required, 4,000 children are, you know, in emergency accommodation at the moment. That's outrageous. I mean, so many children to be facing up to summer holidays, you know, living all day in a family hub or a B&B. It's not the way children should be brought up. I mean, you've probably seen it, but the Ombudsman for Children brought out a detailed report back in February on the impact on living in emergency accommodation has on children. And they actually spoke to the children directly in the children's own words of what it's like living in emergency accommodation. And that book would break your heart, and it should be absolutely enforced that every single member of the Dáil, from the Taoiseach right the way down, should be forced to read that book. Because if you read that book and you can't see that homes are needed for these children, well then there's no hope for us.
Well, we spoke about it before. We did an hour-long special on the impact of the children growing up in these hubs and, you know, bed and breakfasts and things. And it's completely detrimental to their growth, to their stability, to, you know, not having their friends close by, their whole, you know, it's horrendous to think that this country, as you say, was supposed to be a first world country, plenty of money for this, that and the other, and it seems wealthy. But as you say, we've a third world health service, and the housing crisis is just gone beyond belief. Now, with this closure of the place in Thomas Street, to go back to the brew, they say they've opened somewhere else. Where is it that they're transitioning the people across to? Or
we weren't actually told that. So we were advised that there's going to be about 170 extra beds brought online over the next couple of weeks. Now, they did assure us that 120 of them were available straight away for the closure of the Brew, but they never actually stated where these hospitals are. So it tends to be one of those situations where it's usually the service users or the people that come to us for support during the day or for case management support that tend to tell us, actually, no, this is the hospital I was put in last night. It's just newly opened. So we tend to get, you know, the feedback secondhand, so to speak, which, again, it beggars belief to me that the communication is not better, because there's no point in having these services available and not speaking to the likes of ourselves or, you know, other NGOs or even static superuns that are out on the GPO and, you know, these types of places, to let them know, look, we have X amount of beds in the next place coming in. So if you do meet people, try and go push them to the free phone, because there are beds available, but they don't seem to do that.
No, I just can't understand why they don't communicate with the likes of yourselves. But another thing is that hostel, that place where they had the Umbrew Hampshire on Thomas Street, is that privately owned? And because the lease ended, what are they going to do with that building? Is it going back to?
Yeah, no, that was privately owned, so they had a lease from the private owner. So it's not like it's a case that it's actually a council building for them to turn into something else. So it wasn't really their stay, I suppose, in that regard. As I said, from the feedback we've gotten, it actually was open a lot longer than was originally expected. So I suppose it was expected to happen, but like I said, was it communicated properly? I don't believe it was. There's no point in having all these things happening, you know, on 24 hours notice without telling the service users correctly what's happening, without keeping the likes of ourselves in the loop as well. And again, as I say, communication is a very basic thing, but it's something that the government and the council seem to lack dramatically at times.
I know, and I mean, it's not as if they only find out at the last minute. They know these things are happening, so they should be letting you guys know and get putting in place something, you know, a unit that will hold the same, if not more. But putting all of that in place in the time it's taking to, well, our lease is coming up now. So the year before, 6 months before, if they know that's happening, why aren't they planning ahead?
Yeah, it should be managed a lot better than it is. As I say, it seems to be a case where they feel that if they can turn around and say, yes, this place is closing tomorrow, but we have the extra beds, that's sufficient. But it's not really, because you need a proper plan in place. You need to make sure that the people that are residents in the Brew are well aware of where they'll be going to, what the closure is happening, what supports are in place to make that transition easy for them. And that support doesn't seem to be there. The lack of communication on the front line has always been a huge, huge problem. And there still is quite a bit of naivety when it comes to people's opinions on the hostel, because we've had a lot of people that we've spoken to within the council that seem to think that the hostels are excellent and they're up to standard. We know that's not the case, because we speak to people that are actually sleeping in these hostels and they tell us what's going on. We've seen photographs of what's going on. And I think as long as the council persists in, for example, going through these hostels during the daytime. So if it's an overnight hostel, for example, most of the people will be out in the streets again the next morning at 7:30 or 7:30. So obviously a cleaning team will come in, they'll clean the hostel up during the day. So if the council or the department or anyone is going in to see these hostels and they're going in at 2 or 3 o'clock during the afternoon, the place probably does look very clean and probably does look very well kept. But if they went back in there at 1 o'clock in the morning, they might see exactly firsthand why some people are so afraid to go into hostels, why there is these security issues, but they don't seem to want to know. Again, it's the ostrich syndrome of bury the head in the sand and hope that it all goes away.
Yes, definitely. Oh my God, it would just annoy you so much. I don't know how you do the work you do without pulling all your hair out, Brian, because really, it would just be, it's so frustrating, I'm sure, trying to...
It's so frustrating, Adrian, there's no question about that. It is very frustrating, but then again, I suppose it also fuels the fire with why we do what we do, because you hear these stories firsthand from the people affected by it, whether it's an individual in an overnight hostel or a family in a B&B or a hub. And when you speak to these people and you hear the despair in their voice and how they're feeling from it, that sometimes puts the fuel in the fire for us to say we have to keep fighting and keep doing what we're doing. And that's what keeps us going as well.
Yes, well, thank God you're still going and that you're there trying to help them out. And can you give the details to the listeners of how they can get in touch with you? I'm sure you're always looking for volunteers. You're always looking for maybe sleeping bags and supplies and things like that. So if you give out your website, what's the website there and the, how to
get in touch? So people can get in touch with us, Adrienne, on our website, which is www.ichh.ie. Mm-hmm. They can also contact us. We're very active on our social media platforms. So on Facebook, we're Inner City Health and Homeless. On Twitter, we're ICHH Dublin. And on Instagram, we're ICHH Dublin as well. So mm-hmm. people can get in touch with us on any of those platforms regarding volunteering, you know, donating food or clothes or sleeping bags, as you said, or getting involved, you know, on the front line with ourselves. Whatever they want to do, they can get in touch with us that way and we'll be happy to have them.
Brilliant. And of course, they can always call in to 67 Amien Street. That's where your offices are at.
That's correct, Adrienne. Yeah.
Great. Thanks so much, Brian, for coming on again. And I know we'll be talking again. I would love for us to be talking in a more positive light the next time with a bit of good news. Wouldn't that be great?
Thanks, Adrienne. Mm-hmm. Have a good day. Thanks.
Yes, you too. Take care. Bye-bye. Now, that was Brian McLaughlin there from Inner City Helping Homeless. And if you can do anything to help, volunteer or drop in some supplies to them, anything at all, they're at 67 Amien Street, as I said. And he said Facebook is Inner City Helping Homeless. So check that out or go to their website, www.ichh.ie.